And welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. It's the beginning of the week. The Packers have their opponents, the Rams. The rest of the NFL playoff teams have been halved. But before we start, on Friday, I called an audible and decided to find the best rants, uncensored rants, of the late Tommy Lasorda's colorful career as Dodgers manager. In 2 days, that became the second most listened to show that we've ever done. I guess you guys like to hear Tommy Lasorda swearing, which is fine. There's a reason that I put it out there. I thought it was funny, but you guys really responded to it as well. So thank you for that. The most listened to show that we've ever done is still the hour that I did with my old morning show partner, Mike Wickett. That's still number one. I haven't checked the statistics. That's number one by a pretty comfortable margin. But I will go back and check the statistics. And maybe the Tommy Lasorda swearing for 20 minutes, using the F word for 20 minutes. Who knows? That may be, when all is said and done, the most listened to show that we do. But I get it. It's different. It's something that's not necessarily what you think of when you think of Tommy Lasorda. But that's what I think of when I think of Tommy Lasorda. I think of him talking about Kurt Bavakwa, and I think of him talking about Dave Kingman. Those are the things that I remember most about Tommy Lasorda. And listen, I've got some other stuff to unleash. I got a lot of gems from the Russell Files in subsequent shows, so hang tight. We'll get to them, I promise. I don't do the podcast, by the way, for download statistics, but I did think that that was interesting and just wanted to bring it to you as well. Of course, you can always find all of our podcasts that you can download for free 24/7 at your leisure. It's just very simple, DougRussellPod.com. You can also find our email, which is DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Also, our socials, Instagram and Twitter, both at DougRussellPod. That's the username. We've also got a YouTube channel. Have to do another YouTube video soon. And also our Facebook page as well. All right. Anyway, to the NFL. The Packers, they will have the early game on Saturday with the Rams after L.A. went into Seattle and took care of business.
Akers is his single back, strong right formation. He'll hand off. Left side run. Akers up the middle. Into the end zone. Touchdown, L.A. The rookie with a finger roll over the goalpost as he takes it in from five. A play action. Goff lost the ball. Left side. Caught the five. Robert Woods walks in and launches it into the stands in celebration. Touchdown, L.A. And the Rams are advancing.
It feels really good. I think it's satisfying, but by no means are we any bit finished or fully satisfied. I think, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, and next week will be another challenge, and we'll be ready. My thumb is fine. It was, and I'm not going to use it as an excuse for anything that didn't go my way today on any throw or anything. My thumb is fine. It's coming along. It's not 100% because it had surgery 10 days ago or 12 days ago, whatever, but it's in a good place, and I'm very capable with what I got going on right now.
That's quarterback Jared Goff, play-by-play courtesy of KSBN Radio in Los Angeles. The final score, 30-20. The Rams beat the Seahawks. Seattle, it's just their third playoff loss at home in team history, and it's the second one that they've ever had to the Rams. Meanwhile, staying in the NFC, in Landover.
Dropping deep, Brady throws the ball to the right side. He's got to be open. Antonio Brown, 3-2-1. Touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brady finds AB at the 5, and Antonio Brown takes it in to the paint of the end zone. Second down and goal. Hand the ball off, and Fournette, a stutter step. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. A little stutter step when he took the hand off and exploded off left guard, and the Bucs get it. Badly needed touchdown. Yeah. It's 27-16.
The great Gene Deckerhoff on WXTV Radio in Tampa. The Buccaneers beat the Washington football team 31-23. Tom Brady's 31 career playoff wins, most by a quarterback.
If you could win 100-0, and it's going to be the same result in the end. So, you know, you'd love to play great every game. You know, I think it's good to win in advance. And, you know, if we don't play well next week, you know, we're not gonna be happy. So glad we won. Glad we got another week of work, and we're gonna go in there and try to do a much better job this week, and get ready for whoever our opponent is. It's gonna be a good one.
Again, your final score 31-23. The Buccaneers beat Washington. Finally, from the NFC, no style points in the Big Easy.
Second and goal from the three. Three's in the gun. Kamara to his left. Three receivers spread right. They're going to hand it off to Kamara, who's a seam up the middle into the end zone. Touchdown.
WWL Radio with the call in New Orleans. The final score, 21-9 in this one for New Orleans. It's the fewest points they've ever allowed in a playoff game in team history. The Bears did not look sharp. Saints quarterback Drew Brees.
The guys up front, I felt like did a great job against a really good pass rush front. By sustaining those drives, you know, you end up getting those 12-play, 15-play. We had a few of those drives in the second half, which, you know, chewed up a bunch of clock, kept our defense off the field and fresh, and we're able to get points. And at the end of the day, you know, despite the first half where we felt like, you know, we weren't really able to capitalize on some of the drives and really get significant points. You know, defense played lights out, special teams played really well, played the field position game at times. It was just great complimentary football all the way around.
Once again, the final score, 21-9. The Saints eliminate the Bears. Chicago's offense, they did not look good. So, coming up next Sunday, January 17th, it's the late game, the last game of the weekend, as a matter of fact, in the NFC. It's the Buccaneers and the Saints from New Orleans, and you can watch that game on Fox. Meanwhile, over in the AFC, it was the Ravens and the Titans from Nashville.
On 3rd and 9, Jackson to throw. Steps up, pocket collapsing, he escapes. He's to the 40-yard line, 35-30, Lamar Jackson to the 20, leg race, 10-5. And he's pushed out of bounds at the 1-yard line. No! Signal is touchdown! Lamar Jackson!
First and goal from the Titans 4. Jackson in the gun. Hands it to Dobbins off the left side. Slips in. Touchdown! J.K. Dobbins! And the Ravens have their first lead of the game.
Jerry Sandusky on the call on WBAL radio in Baltimore. The Ravens a touchdown better than the Titans, 20-13.
It feels good. I'm happy we got it done. All phases played great today. We know it's going to be a tough matchup. You know, they beat us 2 times that I've been here. I'm just happy we got the victory, man. Our team played great today. We finished. It's not going to be the same results as last year. That was on my mind. I told Coach, you know, Coach Erd was talking to me the whole time, the whole game. He always do that, but I was telling him locked in, you know, that shouldn't have been an interception. I was ticked off about it. I'm still ticked off about it, but we got the victory, so I can't be too mad.
Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson.
It is Zach Moss in the backfield with Josh Allen, the snap. And he keeps it himself on the quarterback option, runs right side. He is in. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills get the lead back again. They go 96 yards and take the lead. Josh firing deep down near the end zone, looking for Diggs. He's got it. Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! There's Stephon Diggs, a 35-yard hookup with Josh Allen. Touchdown, Bills. Waiting, going for all of it down the right sideline. The pass up in the air. It is knocked down incomplete. Micah Hyde knocks it down, and the clock shows zero. The Bills advance. The Bills win it.
John Murphy on the call on WGR Radio in Buffalo. For the Bills, it's their first playoff win since 1995.
It's playoffs, man. I'm just trying to do whatever I can to help this team win football games. If Dave's dials it up, I got to do my job. Take an extra guy out the box, give us numbers inside. You know, it's always a viable option for us, and we know that. We made some good plays today, and that's all I'm happy about.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen. His team will be at home against Baltimore this Saturday night on NBC, a 7:15 kickoff, so it'll be the Packers first, and then the Ravens and the Bills. But the craziest game of the weekend had to be in Pittsburgh between the Steelers and the Browns.
3 receivers go out wide to the right. 1 near side to the left. Baker looks it over in the shotgun with Chubb on his left hip. On 2nd and 10, he's back to throw. Got a Brits coming in. Screen pass right side. Here comes Chubb. 35, 30, 25, 20. He's going. He's gone. Nick Chubb is in. Touchdown.
ESPN Radio Cleveland with the call. Now, this was a game that seemed like it was over in the first quarter. The Browns got up 28-0 in the first quarter, and then held on for dear life in the second half. At one point, they were also up 35-7. And then the Steelers just kept chipping away at it. And they did it in chunks as well. Look at Ben Roethlisberger's numbers in this one. He attempted 68 passes, completed 47 of them for 501 yards. Now, he also threw 4 interceptions to go along with his 4 touchdowns. So despite the fact that Ben Roethlisberger had over 500 yards passing, his quarterback rating was only 85.5. Juju Smith-Schuster, he had 13 receptions. He was targeted, by the way, 19 times. Did get one touchdown, 157 yards on the night for the former USC Trojan. Also, Deontay Johnson, not a bad night for a number two. 11 receptions for 117 yards. But Ben Roethlisberger, one of the stories in this one, but all of those turnovers, all of those interceptions still in the end.
Mayfield takes a snap. That's going to do it from Pittsburgh, from Heinz Field. Sit back and watch and listen to this one inside a half minute, and the Browns will not have to snap the ball again. They will beat the Steelers in the opening round of the playoffs on a wonderful, wonderful wild card weekend. They knock off the Steelers 48-37. Kansas City, here we come!
Again, WKNR Radio in Cleveland with the call. The Browns hanging on for dear life. The final score, 48-37. For Cleveland, it's their first playoff win since 1994. Also for Cleveland, it's their first road playoff win since before I was born.
It means a lot for our guys to step up. You know, we lost, a few guys. Obviously, missing Joel sucks. But Michael Dunn stepped up in a huge way, and then Jack goes down. Kendall Lamb steps up in a huge way, and then Michael ends up going down, and Blake, who I just met tonight, ends up stepping up in a huge way. So I mean, the resilience and the next man up mentality that we've been talking about the whole season, and for some of these guys that weren't even here while we were talking about it, it permeates the whole team. And for us to come out like that, for the defense to play like that, and us to play complimentary football and get a great start, it just means so much. Just to do our job. We didn't have to do anything special. Take a deep breath, one play at a time, and keep scoring, keep putting points on the board, whether it was touchdowns or field goals, and make them play catch up. You know, because obviously, like I said, the defense did such a great job early on to put the pressure on them that our job was easy.
Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield. All right, so let's reset the schedule for this weekend. Of course, the early game is the Packers and the Rams. That is a 3:35 kickoff. It'll be on Fox. Packers 13-3 in the regular season. The Rams now 11-6 on the year. We'll get to the Packers and the Rams in just a second. The late game on Saturday is in the AFC between the Ravens and the Bills from Buffalo. That's a 7:15 kickoff. You can watch that game on NBC. Meanwhile, on Sunday, two more games. First, in the AFC, it's the Browns and the Chiefs from Kansas City. Of course, Kansas City, the top seed over in the AFC. That game will be on CBS starting at 2:05. And then at 5:40, it'll be the Buccaneers and the Saints from New Orleans. That game will be on Fox. All right, as for the Packers' chances, it's going to be offense versus defense, right? The Packers have the NFL's number one scoring offense. They'll be up against the NFL's top scoring defense. The Rams allowing just 18.5 points per game this season. All right, you know the name Aaron Donald. He's someone who can absolutely wreak havoc on opposing offensive lines, but don't sleep on Leonard Floyd. We may remember him from his time when he was with the Chicago Bears, but he has had an outstanding 2020 season. 10.5 sacks, 52 quarterback pressures this year. Do not sleep on Leonard Floyd while you're paying attention to Aaron Donald. The one matchup that I'm really, really looking forward to is Jalen Ramsey versus Davante Adams. You've got two of the best at their position, two All-Pros at their positions, and they're going to be battling head-to-head. Adams should get some against Ramsey because Davante is just that good. But what this is going to mean for the Packers is that that second guy that we've been waiting for all season long to step up and be that guy consistently, whether it's MVS, who cannot drop touchdown passes this time around. You can't afford that nonsense once January rolls around. Maybe it's a guy like Alan Lazard, who's got good size, good speed, good hands. Robert Tonyan is going to get a lot of looks. You're going to need your running backs out of the backfield as well. Aaron Jones is going to get a lot of safety valve types of passes thrown his way, likely if you've got, again, Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd wreaking havoc up front. Jamal Williams should get some touches as well. I think this is going to be a good game. It's going to be offense versus defense. Pound for pound, player for player, I think the Packers are better, but I can't swear to it because the Packers came from a pretty mediocre division this year while the Rams are coming out of the NFC West. And you are tested in the NFC West. The NFC West this year was the best and most stout division in all of football. Now, the Rams, They've had a couple of hiccups this season. They have had some absolute clunkers during this season. But they're a good football team, and Jared Goff is a good quarterback. So it's also going to be a matchup of Sean McVay versus Matt LaFleur. LaFleur was at one point McVay's offensive coordinator in Los Angeles with the Rams. That was before his season with the Titans. So these two guys know each other. They go all the way back to their days in Washington with the then-named Redskins years ago. So, again, there's not going to be that many surprises in this one. It's going to be one guy's strength going up directly against the other guy's strength. And again, two coaches who know how each other thinks. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great game. And hopefully the Packers have better luck this time around than they did the last time they had the top seed in the NFC playoffs 9 seasons ago when they were bounced in the divisional round by the eventual Super Bowl champion New York Giants. All right, I had intended to play this interview on Friday, but the breaking Tommy Lasorda passing on that day kind of did this interview in. I did want to bring it to you today, however. It was my conversation last week with 6-time national champion while he was at UW-Whitewater. And for the last 6 seasons, he's been the University of Buffalo, an FBS school, their head football coach, Lance Leipold. Coach, Happy New Year. Good to catch up with you again. Thanks for joining me on the show.
Well, Happy New Year, Doug. It's great to be with you again, and it's great to hear your voice.
Great to hear yours as well. First question for you, Coach. How challenging was this season, considering all of the COVID protocols that were in place and everything that you had to deal with coaching 100 young men and to try to keep them as safe as possible?
You know, it's hard to explain, to be honest, because sometimes you're just in day-by-day mode of kind of making it through the day, and I kind of look back to what June and July were even like before the season was at that time canceled for us. But our strength staff and our medical staff, Doug, it's amazing how the things they had to put together was, you know, these cohorts and lifting pods and who could come into the building when and what time, and you're trying to do it by positions, you're trying to do it by offense, defense, but the roommates are on opposite sides and all these things. And really the time that was put in to make it work has just been astronomical of an accomplishment. And then when we went to our meetings and testing, and everything was done in our indoor facility, which is only a year old, and to be fortunate even to have it now, and the things, the sacrifices that these players went through, I think really have to be commended, and for them to be able to be successful and get the amount of games in that we did is truly remarkable. And I'm really proud of everyone involved.
Did you have to go to like virtual meetings, Zoom meetings, things like that for the position groups and whatnot?
We did. We did at the beginning of the year up until we really got going into game week. We did all virtual stuff just to kind of backtrack before really things were shut down on campus. We were a fortunate school to get 9 spring practices in. I had moved it up the earliest ever, and I think that kind of paid off. We left on spring break. Our players never returned. So Zoom became something I never even knew what Zoom was, and March 1st of last year, you know, it became every coach's best friend, and did a lot of things through that, did it through the summer, did it through August. And then once we went into our testing protocols, we decided that we would do in-person meetings and split offense and defense around our testing times. And we're a morning practice team. So we started testing every day with staff, and whether it be strength staff, training staff, coaching staff, at about 6 a.m. every day. And the days we tested, and then the players started between 6:30 and 6:45. And then went to player, then the meetings, then to practice. So you could see that being a lot on a lot of people's plates.
Did you have to test your players every day?
We were testing 4 times a week. So
4 times a week.
Usually that was a Sunday. If it was a Saturday game, it would be a Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday type scenario. Okay. So, and really made us feel good. And I was one that I felt very strongly about testing before every practice so that our players felt safe and secure, that everyone around them was cleared for the day. Obviously, on the non-testing day, then you go about, you know, 36 plus hours maybe of not knowing, but we're very fortunate, and especially in our two deep, we did not lose anybody to a COVID or even a contact tracing or anything from that during the season. And the couple players that did have it were walk-ons. Our biggest issue that we had was probably late September, and that was more in the our younger players in the dorms, but we never were fully, once we get in a full practice mode, we are never paused at any time.
Let's talk about the season. You went 6-1. You capped off your season at the Camellia Bowl on Christmas Day with a win over Marshall. Tell me about the season, how it unfolded. When did you know that this was a special group that could contend? I mean, you got to the MAC championship game, your only blemish of the season, but again, 6-1 is 6-1, and that's significant.
Yeah, we thought we had a chance to be a good football team based on returning. We ended last year's season on an up note. Our first bowl win in school history against Charlotte in the Bahamas. Had a lot of returning pieces to that. And this group was just based on off-season leadership and focus. It was heading in the right direction. We played week one in against Northern Illinois, a team we lost to in the conference championship in 2018. Played well, scored three defensive touchdowns in the opener, came back week two against Miami of Ohio, who were conference champs in 2019, and really played well. Probably played our most complete game of the year with explosive plays in the passing game. We had two outstanding running backs in Jared Patterson, Kevin Marks, but we were able to kind of show our versatility and explosiveness in the receiving core and our tight ends in that game. And I really think after that game, our players started to feel the confidence that they had a chance to be a pretty special team.
Tell me about Jared Patterson as long as we're there. I mean, the one game against Kent State, 409 yards on the ground. I know he had some knee issues for the bowl game. There were Heisman Trophy whispers. He was incredible this season. Not bad for a kid who wasn't heavily recruited coming out of high school.
No, he wasn't. He and his twin brother, James, knew about our program even before one of their assistant high school coaches played at Buffalo under Turner Gill and had great memories, great experience. And James and Jared had made trips up to Buffalo when they were underclassmen and we had a chance to meet them. We wanted both of them. James had committed first, then Jared was going to commit. We already had Kevin Marks, our other running back I spoke of, who was a 1,000-yard rusher as well in his career, commit to us early. And so we told Jared that, yes, we want you, but we would like you to grayshirt, which would need delay enrollment to January. And he said he would do it. And then James decided to wait with him. And as they kind of say, the rest is history. They come in, they're outstanding young men. Jared's a hard worker. Both have started since their freshman season. Been impactful. Jared's not the tallest, and he's not always the fastest, but he's got a great quickness, great vision, great patience, and he puts those all together. And I really, he's got an impressive balance too, he's got a great combination of things to kind of put up those type of stats and be as durable as he's been and as productive as he's been.
Has Jarrett given you any indication about his immediate future? I mean, he's eligible to go pro, but as you mentioned, maybe a little bit undersized for the league.
Well, I think that as it'll come out, Doug is that he's going to probably head to the NFL. For that, and I give him full blessing. We talked before the season that if he replicated, the type of numbers that he did his sophomore season, that it's probably in his best interest to do so. He was really torn. He's torn about leaving his brother. He's torn about he's going to finish his degree. He really was, thinking about just playing and finishing it out. But I just think, when you look at everything, the career span of maybe running backs, the whole timing of it, risk of coming back, I think all those things put him in a position that he thought was going to be in his best interest.
All right, so it looks like he's going to make the jump. That's something that you're not entirely unfamiliar with. When you took over 6 years ago at Buffalo, you had just won your sixth Division III national championship in 8 years at Whitewater. I mean, you had been an assistant, graduate assistant at Wisconsin, an assistant at Nebraska, so it's not like you've ever never been around FBS Division I football before, but now you've jumped from Division III to Division I. If you can take me back to 6 years ago, looking back on it, what was the biggest difference between the two levels?
It seems sometimes like it was yesterday, and then sometimes it seems like it's many moons ago. But I'd say, of course, the recruiting aspect. You know, the Division III recruiting is a little bit more. Things filter down to you a little bit. This one, you've got to be in the game earlier and consistently. More of the underclass recruiting or identification. I still think as a group of five school where many times, you know, you have to kind of see what plays out above you. We put a lot of time and effort on guys and think we have them. And it just takes one phone call at the 11th hour for a Power Five to just come up and swoop a guy away from a school in the MAC. But those are some of the things, the travel of recruiting and those things, versus a 3-hour radius, let's say, of a Division III program. But the other one I think, Doug, that really stuck out to me was probably the size of the staff, you know, the amount of assistants and your training staff of the amount of trainers, your video people, your strength staff, just the day-to-day part of communication and everything, making sure people are on the same page as far as running a program and at least running it the way we want to run it to make sure that it's heading in the right direction.
Last couple of minutes with Lance Leipold, head coach at the University of Buffalo. He appears on the Progressive Insurance guest line here on Sports Map Radio. When you took over the Buffalo football program, as I said at the outset, Coach, this was a program that had kind of bounced around between levels. They had never been ranked, never been to a bowl game. Now you've done both. You've won bowl games the last two seasons. How does a coach come in and change that culture from a losing culture to the winning culture that you have now?
You know, it's funny you said that because there's times when this opportunity came up, it's one of those that you're like, you know, being in Wisconsin and knowing and respecting the Mid-American Conference for what it's known for, some of the players, the Roethlisberger, the Khalil Mack, the Antonio Browns, there's and many others. You watch the games on the weeknights when you get a chance to watch football. There's a lot of things, but then there's other things you don't know. But at the same time, I thought it was way too good of an opportunity for a career move to take on the challenge. But then you kind of get into the weeds a little bit and you don't realize that this program had only won 37% of its games as an FBS football program, only won 27% of its conference games. And you're like, oh boy, we got some work to do. But I think it still goes back to the same fundamentals, even when we were at Wisconsin Whitewater. And that is, just the daily expectation of doing things right, being sound fundamentally, being sound in what we expect our players to do, and that's being on time and being coachable and giving maximum effort each and every day for improvement. And sometimes you don't see it exactly on the scoreboard, but internally, when you keep expecting and demanding it and you get your leaders to embrace it, you start chipping away at it. And sometimes you take a step forward and then you'll take a couple steps back. And year two is a very difficult year for us. We're 2-10. But then you started to see the improvements when we won 6 games in 17 and then 10 games in 18. And those are some of the same things that you do and you want to do. And whether you're winning or losing. And now that we've had success, we have to make sure that we don't compromise any of those things that helped us get to this point.
Been a pretty good time to be a football fan in Buffalo with what you're doing in that, you know, other team over in Orchard Park. It's been a good year.
Yes, it has. You know, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have been outstanding, what they've done with the Buffalo Bills. But also in their relationship with us, we used to use their indoor facility before ours. They've been very welcoming and accommodating and supportive of our program. And it's been interesting to kind of watch that development because, Coach McDermott brought his philosophy on how they were going to do it. You could see the type of player they were bringing in as well. And it's been exciting. And again, for, an area community that has been starving for winning football for over 20 years now, it's great to bring back winning in the South Towns and in the North Towns.
Lance, great catching up with you. Appreciate the time. Appreciate your friendship over the years as well. Continued success at Buffalo, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
That sounds great, Doug. Great to hear your voice. Like I said earlier, great to catch up, and happy New Year to you and all the listeners out there.
Buffalo head coach Lance Leipold joining me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. All right, coming up later in the week, much more on the Packers and the Rams. The playoffs are finally here. We'll have a full preview on Friday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast. As always, you can hit us up on our socials. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter, same username, at Doug Russell Pod. You can email us at any time, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Just search for the Doug Russell Podcast. And we're also on YouTube. I'm a little been a little lax on the YouTube videos, but we'll endeavor to make that a New Year's resolution in 2021 to be a little bit more regular with those as well. Anyway, it's going to be a great week. It's going to be a full week of talking about football over on 97.3 The Game. We would invite you to go over and take a listen as well if you're in the Milwaukee area. We're also on all over the state as well. Otherwise, I'll see you right back here on Friday on the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a great week. We'll see you then.